Well, Griffin sat back, folded his hands, and said, "You know the IPO Space Force is too small. Needs to expand, and fast." Utrina nodded again. "Uh-huh." "The Sovereign class is a great technological achievement, and a perfect symbol of all the IPOSF is trying to stand for," the commander allowed. "But it's not very practical as the basis for a fleet. At least, not with the support organization, manpower pool, and operational timetable we're working with." "Right," said Utrina. "I've been thinking about this off and on since the last time I was on Challenger. She's a great flagship, but for most of the Space Force operation types described in the personnel manual, what we'd really need is a fleet of fast-building ships with high automation and low crew requirements." Griffin slapped his leg, grinning broadly. "Yes," he declared. "God, you're sharp. I knew I didn't just make you a captain because I thought you'd look cute in the uniform." Utrina went a little red, grinned, and said, "So what's the plan?" "The plan, Captain, is this. I've got two shipyards, the IPO fleet yards at Zeta Cygni, and the Kanzaki Heavy Industries yards at Ishiyama, building prototypes for two classes of cutting-edge fast-attack destroyers. By May, both will be online and ready for field trials." Griffin leaned back in his seat again and smiled, his eyes twinkling like Corwin's did when he had what he thought was a really good idea. "Once school's done for the year, how'd you like to take one of them out?" Utrina blinked. "Me?" she said. "You've got a master's cert. You're the only other captain in the fleet aside from Kronteb, and I can't reassign him. He's seconded in from the KDF. He has to stay with the Khoskaj. Granted, these ships have crew complements of about a dozen, so it's not really a captain's command, but..." He shrugged. "Unless you already had plans for the summer, of course." "Well, no, not really, but... I don't know. I mean, this summer, I won't even be out of high school. A 16-year-old girl in command of an experimental warship? Isn't that a little... weird?" Griffin laughed. "Weird? Hell no," he declared. "It's damn bizarre. Totally irregular. But we don't do things in a regular way in the International Police Organization," he added with a grin. "That's why I'm putting the field trials under the purview of a new department, the Irregular Projects Group." "I'm not sure," Utrina said, still looking dubiously thoughtful. "I mean, I got my master's cert so that I could fly myself around, not command a starship. Well, maybe someday, but..." She trailed off. Griffin leaned forward, putting his elbows on his knees, and grinned. He could read it in her azure eyes. She was thinking about the day she'd spent in command of Krontep Vathkesek's Klingon cruiser, the Khoskaj. Krontep had made a full report to his chief after that grand outing, and it had been glowing and optimistic. She'd enjoyed herself and acquitted herself well. Granted, it had only been a routine patrol, not anything particularly taxing, but still. Something flickered across her face, and she smiled with less dubiousness and more thoughtfulness. Griffin's grin widened. He could see it all in her face. His own face had worn the same look once, long ago. His original prediction to Krontep had been right. "Where would you find a crew that would take me seriously?" she asked. "I mean, I don't exactly look the part, and it takes time to win respect. I have to go back to school in the fall. I won't have time to get to know a crew and make them know me." "I wouldn't find one," Griffin replied. "You would. Another irregular thing about the Irregular Projects Group. I name you commanding officer. You pick your own crew." "I don't know any experienced spacers except Corwin and Amanda, and she's busy. And Liza, I suppose." Griffin nodded. "That's part of the experiment. We're trying to build these new ships so that inexperienced but reasonably smart people, like below expert level IPO field officers, can jump in and get operational with a minimum of screwing around. A week or two of familiarization, then on-the-job experience. Like the Danube and Kennebec classes on a larger scale, you know? Utrina nodded. She did indeed. I'm sure you know a dozen inexperienced but reasonably smart people who might be up for a spot of space adventure this summer. Griffin went on with a conspiratorial smile. The only really highly trained person these ships will need aboard, if we do our job right building them, will be the engineer. With a wink, Griffin added, I think I know a qualified engineer who would volunteer to be on your crew in a heartbeat. Utrina smiled, feeling her cheeks get a little warm, and said, You think maybe? Then she pondered it for a few minutes and said, You know, I still have business unfinished back home. There's no guarantee I'll be here this summer. Griffin shrugged. We'll burn that bridge when we get to it, he said. Hell, you might consider taking your ship with you. You never know when a heavily armed and armored starship might come in handy, he told her, wagging an admonishing finger. Say, she replied, that's a thought. As she paused briefly to imagine the Otori Academy bell tower being relieved of Akio's apartment by a photon torpedo. You don't have to decide right now, Griffin said. Like I said, the prototypes won't be out of functional test and ready for crew takeover until May. But I think you ought to seriously consider it, he added. It would give you some valuable space experience, it'd help me test my new ships. He grinned and added, And I think it'd be a hell of a lot of fun. Utrina nodded. She mused. Well, let me think about it for a bit. Maybe talk it over with some of the others. She smiled. Maybe we can work something out. Griffin grinned. Absolutely no hurry, he assured her. A silence ensued. Not an awkward one, but comfortable, as Utrina thought, and Skuld and Griffin left her to it. Then the doorbell rang. Oh, I'll get that, Skuld said, and she got up from her seat to head for the front door. While the goddess did that, Utrina remained on the couch, her book resting against her thigh as she tapped her fingers against its cover. She did have to admit, privately, that Griffin's offer was attractive. If she and her friends somehow managed to rescue Anthe from the situation she'd been left in back in Sephiro in a timely manner, Utrina knew that a handful of her friends in the Duelists and IBGF would be all over some space action like white on rice. Belana, for one, would have to be pried away from the engineering spaces, much like the end of her prior summer's internship on Babylon 5. Wakaba would certainly be interested. And where the auburn-haired Duelist went, Sionji was sure to be close behind, provided they managed to get him back as well. But if indeed he had been hauled back to Sephiro, well, make it a double rescue. Sky probably could be convinced to come along as well, to document their grand adventure across the stars in paint, and if one wanted experienced spacers, Liza Shustal would have to be on the list. Adding Liza to her crew roster would most likely bring Azalin along if she didn't decide to go back to Dantrov for the summer. Griffin was right, Utrina thought with a smile. Thinking of a dozen people who might be interested in space adventure was not that difficult at all. The question remained, of course, of whether Anthe would be interested. After all she'd been through, a just-rescued Rosebride might well want nothing to do with another grand adventure, at least not so soon. And of course there was what Kate would think about it, but Utrina could ask that of her roommate the next time they talked. Which is why it was fortunate that Caitlin Hutchins was right now stepping through the front door of the Ravenhair home, followed by Juri Arisugawa and Miki Kaworu, the latter laden down with several loop-handled shopping bags. What the... Utrina exclaimed, blue eyes going wide as she got a good view of the three, escorted by Skuld into the living room. She dropped her book and shot to her feet from the couch. Juri? Miki? Kate? Well, hello, Tenjo, Juri said with her little Vulcan smile. Fancy meeting you here, of all places. Hi, Kate said with a matching smile, though this one was a tad more impish, as she waved her fingers at her friend and roommate. Mickey would wave, but his hands are busy. Mickey, ever the soul of courtesy, put his bags down before waving. Now they're not, he replied pedantically. Oh, by the way, Utena, Griffin said with a mock distracted expression and a twinkle in his blue eyes as he got out of his chair. Before I forget, I just happened to be shuttling Kate, Jury, and Mickey to their conference on Terpsichore 3 when I decided to drop in and see how you and Skuld were doing. I hope you don't mind that they decided to visit. Utena looked at the elder Hutchins with equal measures of surprise and disbelief. Do I mind? Do I mind? Like hell! With a grin, she embraced her roommate, who returned the gesture with a smile. So, how are you holding up? Kate inquired. Utena arched an eyebrow, smirking. That seems to be the going question around here, she replied, glancing back at Griffin, who tried in vain to look innocent. As well as I can, given the circumstances, Utena continued as she finally released her roommate and escorted her to the living room couch. What are you three doing here? I thought Captain Hutchins had already covered that, Jury commented with a slight smile on her lips as she helped herself to the chair that Griffin had recently vacated. Caitlin tisked at the taller redhead. Remember, call him Griffin, Jury, she mock admonished her companion, which brought a smile to the lips of the man in question. I was just trying to be polite, Jury replied, bemused. There's absolutely nothing wrong with being polite, Mickey added, glancing at his stopwatch before stopping it. Griffin laughed and waved his hands. That's all right, you four, I can cope. He hummed, then looked at Skuld. I don't suppose you have some dishes that need doing. Skuld considered this for a moment, then grinned. As it just so happens, dish cleaner Banpei RV-12 is in the shop for repairs, so I could use the extra pair of hands. Come on. She gestured to Griffin and glanced at the four duelists. Now you four play nice, okay? She asked, to which the group replied in the affirmative. Thus reassured, Skuld and Griffin retired to the kitchen to take care of the dishes. Jury waited until the two adults were out of sight and presumably out of hearing, and then turned toward Utena. Skuld built a dish-cleaning robot? Yep, Utena replied nonchalantly. He's a big help after big dinners. How else do you think the dishes got cleaned after Christmas dinner at Castle Avery? For some reason, I entertained notions of the dishes becoming magically animated when Aunt Belle was present and washing themselves, Jury dryly replied. You have an overactive imagination, Jury dear, Kate chided, though the sparkle in the brown eyes behind her glasses belied her serious expression. Jury bowed her head in mock shame and answered, Yes, Kate, I will endeavor to try to be more boring and unimaginative in the future. In such a perfect deadpan that Utena, reminded of Dorothy when she had first met the robot in Corwin's labs, nearly broke, managing not to only with supreme effort of will. Anyway, Kate continued, as if none of the byplay between herself and the taller redhead had happened, Dad's shuttling Jury, Mickey and me, to Terpsichore 3 for the GMAC conference, and since he was stopping by here, I felt that I might as well show them some of Nekomikoka, while the three of you talked. She smiled slightly and rested a hand atop Utrinus. Figured you could use the time by yourselves before we butted in. Utrina chuckled and squeezed Kate's hand before releasing it. Believe me, Kate, I wouldn't have minded any of you dropping by right now, she answered, looking at Kate, then Juri, then Miki, who had taken the chair Skuld had been sitting in earlier. And I could have shown you the sights myself. I could use the activity. It's just mostly been the weight that's been getting to me, and trying not to worry too much about Corwin. Kate nodded, knowing both her roommate's concern for her half-brother and Utrina's general drive for action, no matter the circumstances. Sitting by idle this way had to be the hardest thing for her to do in a situation like this. He's proven himself more than capable in the past, Utrina. I don't think you have anything to worry about, Miki commented. Yeah, I know, but this is his trial. And sure, he's gotten all with him, but even so. She shrugged, running a hand through her long pink hair. Listen to me. I'm sounding like some overwrought house mother or something. Or a girl whose sweetheart has gone off to war, Juri thought, but she didn't say it. Somewhat to her surprise, the thought didn't carry the undercurrent of bitterness it once would have. She smiled an inscrutable smile at the realization, and made a note to mention the phenomenon to Azalin when next she saw the Dentrovian. No doubt it would please her. Hopefully it wouldn't make her smug. Don't let Aunt Erd hear you say that, Kate commented with a smile, unaware of Juri's private realization. Utrina laughed. Don't worry, I won't. But if I didn't get out of the house enough, I would be going stir-crazy. If only I knew what his trial was, then I could at least have some reassurance. When do we find out what he was assigned to do? Juri inquired, curious. Not until he comes back. Or doesn't, Kate replied quietly. Not even Dad and Aunt Skuld know. Oh, only the council. Juri replied, lacing her hands in front of her face, looking thoughtful. Then she spoke, slowly, choosing her words carefully. Well, one way or another, we shall find out soon enough. Until then, all we can do is wait and carry on, and wish for the best for Corwin and Nall in their endeavor. Agreed, Miki acknowledged with a nod, and Kate joined in. Utrina smiled, surprised and touched at this tacit support from the normally reserved duelist, who had once been so disapproving of her emotional tie to Corwin Ravenhair. Juri wasn't known for boosterism or wishfulness, and here she was advocating both on his behalf. Thanks, you guys. It means a lot. You're welcome, Juri replied, smiling back. She then unlaced her fingers and sat back in the armchair. So, what have you been doing, Tencho, since it's obvious from the state of the walls that you haven't been climbing them? Well, Utrina smiled slyly as she settled on the couch. Before you three got here, Kate's father made a very interesting offer. And so she recounted Griffin's offer to give Utrina a ship to test fly over the summer. Kate smiled, having heard some of this from her father earlier, but she was pleased to see that her roommate was considering it. Whether or not Utrina decided to go for it, contingent on recovering Anthe, most likely, Kate would be behind her all the way. Perhaps, just maybe, she would go along as well. If Juri and Miki shared her interest, of course. Kate's smile turned to a look of concern, however, when Utrina's narrative turned to the little nighttime visit she and Skuld had paid to the observation deck of the entire state building on Sunday evening. And you're certain that they were transitioned somehow to Sephiro as well? Juri asked, her green eyes level and intent. As certain as I can be, Utrinna replied, her fingers fiddling slightly with her Institute Duelist's ring. The thing is, I can't figure out why he would have pulled three girls from three different schools from New Avalon to Sephiro. It just doesn't make sense. It's quite probable that the deputy chairman didn't take them, Utrinna, Mickey pointed out. After all, he isn't the only one with the power to send people across the dimensions, as you and the Master Mage have demonstrated, he reminded her with a slight smile. It's quite possible that others in Sephiro could have that power. That's true, Utrinna reluctantly admitted. It's just nagging at me that people keep appearing and disappearing from there like that, and there's nothing I've really been able to do to keep track of it. She pursed her lips, tapping them with her extended index fingers. And why would anybody have pulled three schoolgirls from New Avalon to Sephiro? There's no telling what trouble Fu and those other two, Marty has their names, but I can't recall them right now, might get into, especially if Akio gets wind of this. Girls from another world? He doesn't have any of those in his collection, she added with a poorly suppressed shiver. Let's not go there, Miki suggested. Agreed, said a troubled-looking jury. Well, if we're lucky, perhaps Kyuichi-kun will run into them, Kate said. Keep them from crossing paths with him. I don't know, Caitlin. Sephiro's a big place, Miki pointed out. The three could have ended up anywhere, not necessarily at Otori Academy, which would still be the chairman's base of operations, and the most likely place Sayanji would have ended up. Said Utrinna, sitting back and putting her fingertips to her forehead as though she had a headache. Photon torpedoing the bastard is looking more and more attractive all the time, she muttered under her breath. I agree, Jury replied. However, the collateral damage to the Academy... Humor me, Jury. It's just an idle fantasy. As you wish, Jury acquiesced. I apologize for having turned the conversation to such worrisome matters. It wasn't my intention to reopen old wounds. Utrinna waved a dismissive hand. Don't worry about it. I'm the one that brought it up. She let out a deep breath, then managed a smile. On a lighter note, how are you set up for GMAC 06? Kate looked thoughtful, then brightened, and glanced over at Miki with a smile. Well, Miki and I have made our final selections. We're hoping that perhaps one of our piano duets will... make the final cut, or maybe the fugue. Utrinna settled back in the couch and glanced over at Jury with a knowing smile, which the taller redhead returned. The technical details of musical theory often went over their heads, but they couldn't help getting caught up in the duelist leader's enthusiasm for her work. Both of them had heard the overall gist of Miki and Caitlin's plans for the conference in the weeks before spring break, but it still didn't hurt to review the itinerary and musical choices. Much like IRCAM, the hosts of the musical symposium Kate and Jury had attended last spring, GMA, the Galactic Musicians Association, held a yearly conference on Terpsichore 3. This aptly named world was one of the galaxy's most renowned musical centers, where the musical archives of over 500 worlds were kept and studied for later interpretation. The participants were the best and brightest the galactic musical community has to offer. Kate privately thought they had borrowed that exact same tagline from Aunt Skuld, so as not to sound like they were stealing from IRCAM. And over the course of a week and a half, they could collaborate and critique on their various works. At the end of the conference, there would be a concert program highlighting the best compositions selected by the GMA's board of directors. It'll essentially be like IrkCam last year, Kate said, as she and Mickey finished their explanations. Except it's on another planet, and it's going to be a week and a half long. Which actually works out quite well for us, Mickey continued, after checking his stopwatch. Since it falls within DSM spring break, all three of us can attend. If classes were in session, we'd have the same problem we had for IrkCam 05. It would either have been myself or Caitlin attending for the Institute while the others stayed behind. Having last week off to get ready didn't hurt either, Kate noted. Huh. Well, how about that? Uchna chuckled. Guess that snowstorm did more good than just for me and Corwin. Indeed, Jury agreed, though we'll pay for it later. Now I'll have to spend most of the off time studying for our delayed finals. I don't know how these two are going to manage it. I'll have a battle on my hands, Kate admitted ruefully. Then she grinned at Mickey and added, but it won't be any problem for the boy genius. Mickey smiled modestly. I'll have to put in some hard study time of my own the weekend of the 18th, I'm sure, he said. By the way, Uchna, you may be amused to know that Jacron laments the lack of your pitching arm in the daily snow battles. Quite volubly, in fact. Uchna laughed, able to imagine the scene all too well. He'll just have to deal. Then she frowned, making a thoughtful noise. Dorothy's not going with you? Mickey shook his head. She's a performer, but hasn't much interest in composing. So? Neither does Jury. That's true, Jury agreed, but she had another engagement anyway. Mickey grinned, nodding. The IPO Psionics Academy's spring dance is Saturday. Apparently neither Amanda nor Rena Dragonara can make it, so Dorothy's going to be Devlin's date. Uchna grinned. That'd give his classmates something to wonder about, she said. Hey, GMAC has the same sort of folks coming to it that IrkCam did, right? Kate nodded, and Jury elaborated for the composer. Both are international symposia, yes. There will be attendees from Earth as well as the other core systems. Right. So I don't suppose that Ragu, she shook her head. Damn it, I can't remember his name. The guy who brought the recording of the jetliner playing the bagpipes in a sheet metal factory. Caitlin giggled. If we're lucky, Ragulin shouldn't show, she said. Though if he did, Mickey and I would be honor bound to finally get him to listen to good music. Unlikely, given GMAC 06 is scheduled this year at the same time as IrkCam 06, Mickey pointed out. That's one good thing about not being able to go back to Earth, Jury pointed out wryly. The École Musico-Technologique's, message hasn't spread beyond the homeworld so far. Kate nodded. I'll miss seeing Mr. Statler again, though. He doesn't get off planet much. I think you'd have liked him, Mickey. Indeed, Jury agreed, fondly remembering the heckling the conductor of the Boston Pops had given the younger composer from the École Musico-Technologique. But at least you won't have to... At this, the redhead paused, searching for the right words, before pressing on, Endure the architectural stylings of the Centre Georges Pompidou, Mickey. Consider yourself fortunate. Is it really that bad? Mickey and Uchna inquired in completely accidental stereo. Yes, Kate and Jury replied in emphatic unison. The mutual synchronicity was sufficient to break Utina, who spent the next several moments giggling in Kate's arms. "Well, now that you've gotten that out of your system," Jury continued archly, though the gleam in her eyes belied her severe tone, "I suppose we had best be getting on our way, Tenjo." "Aw, leaving so soon? And I haven't even been chastised for being so worried yet," Utin replied with a similar tone in her voice and a smile on her lips. "I can chastise you if you really want me to." "No thanks. Pass." "Behave, you two," Kate chided them both as she stood up, "or it's no ice cream for either of you." "I think that's a crime in Skuld's house, no ice cream," Utrin observed. "Or a sin, at least." "Did somebody mention my name in conjunction with ice cream?" asked Skuld as she finally came back out of the kitchen, wiping off her hands with a slightly stained towel. "Oh, I could go for some ice cream, if you happen to have any," Utrin said with a smile. "And if the chief doesn't have a strict schedule to keep," she continued, glancing over Skuld's shoulder as the IPO captain exited the kitchen as well. "I think we could stretch things a bit just this once," Griffin said with a wink. "Just don't make a habit of it." "Perish the thought," Utrina said with a grin as she got up out of the couch. As could be expected in the Ravenhair household, the ice cream available was only the best to be obtained on Tomodachi, or anywhere else in the local system. As the goddess, the IPO chief, and the four duelists ate ice cream around the kitchen table, which was a little cramped with six people, but Skuld laughingly said she preferred to think of it as cozy, Kate, Jury, and Mickey filled in how things had been going back on Gerardo in the wake of the blizzard of '06. Griffin talked about current affairs with the IPO, and Skuld mentioned, with some regret, that after D-term on Gerardo she would have to come back to NIT, which was really a shame because she had thoroughly enjoyed working with the high school students. But, Utrina noted with a smile, it was highly likely that Professor Ravenhair's appearance at DSM had probably guaranteed an increase in admissions for NIT for the next several years from a certain private school. Skuld had to admit the pink-haired duelist had a point, and gave her an extra helping of whipped cream as a reward for her skilled argument. However, to all gatherings, there must come an end, and this one was no different. Ice cream bowls and spoons were piled in the sink in the kitchen, and the group gathered together at the front door to say their mutual goodbyes. "Hey," Utrina said as she released Kate from their parting hug. "Where's Serge?" Kate blinked. "Oh," she said, "GMAC doesn't allow pets," she said with a brief scowl, then smiled and added, "So Wakaba's looking after him, while I'm gone." "Or he's looking after Wakaba," said Miki, his eyes twinkling. Kate chuckled and nodded. "Or that. Utrina laughed and clapped Kate on the shoulder. "Right. Well, you three take care, okay? In one way or another, I'll see you again soon, all right?" "We will, Utrina," Miki nodded, picking up the shopping bags he had set aside on their entry. "Of course, Tenjo," Jury added, and then, hesitatingly, said, "Take care. Whatever happens, Corwin will make his family proud." Utrina nodded, unspoken words traveling between the two of them before she glanced between Skuld, Griffin, and Caitlin. "I'm sure he already has," she said soberly. She then made little shooing motions with her hands, escorting the three duelists and their ride through the door. "Now go on, get out of here before we get really mushy," Utrina said with a smile. "Of course," Jura replied with a confidential little smile of her own. "Good night, Tenjo," Skuld. Jury held the door for Kate, Miki, and Griffin, and then let it close behind her as she walked down the front steps. Utrinna watched them proceed down the sidewalk toward the black Impala waiting at the curb, and then the four humans and one automobile vanished in a pair of transporter shimmers, one personnel, one with the slightly coarser pattern lights of a cargo unit. With a slight smile on her lips and her spirits lifted, Utrinna Tenjo turned from the window and headed further into the house to prepare for bed. Once that was taken care of, she lit a blackberry candle, slipped under the sheets, and drifted off to sleep in Corwin Ravenhair's bed, hoping that its owner would have a good rest tonight, wherever he was. Corwin Ravenhair wanted to lie down. Well, no. He wanted to go home, then lie down. Lying down where he was would have been suicidally stupid, and Corwin was neither suicidal nor, he liked to think, particularly stupid, though admittedly most of his brain wasn't really working right at this particular moment. Still, some instinctive part of him was still on the job, and it knew that stopping would be, well, bad. So he kept walking, despite the fact that his right leg felt like it was going to tear right off at the knee. There was a nasty stitch in his left side, and his vision kept blurring, probably because of the blood running from the nasty cut on his forehead. He wished that would clot already, or just freeze, given that he was slogging into the teeth of a fierce Arctic gale, snow whipping all around him as he forced his feet forward one at a time. On the other hand, what did it matter? There wasn't anything to see anyway in a whiteout. Where the hell, he wondered irritably, if half coherently, did this storm come from anyway? A few minutes ago it had been just as nice as could be, except for all the giant bloodthirsty monsters. Then the temperature had dropped 50 degrees, the wind had started howling, and this blizzard had kicked in like somebody threw a switch. Oh, sure, he muttered under his breath, still slogging mindlessly onward. Sure, he yelled, gesturing angrily. Everybody else has to slay a giant, to survive a week in the frozen wastes, or some damn thing to pass their trial, but not me. Oh, no, no. I have to go play impartial observer on the most fucked up plane in the whole of creation, while it's in the middle of a total cataclysm cycle. He stopped walking momentarily, shook his fist at the sky, and shouted, Oh yeah, I'm living large now. Child of prophecy, my ass! A rumble of thunder rolled across the uncaring sky. Yeah, you don't care, Corwin grumbled, digging one end of his staff into the snow-covered ground and lurching onward. You don't care about any of that stuff. You just want to see how far you can push me. You and your stupid rituals. Will you wait? He bellowed again, gesturing angrily. And Frey wants to destroy this place when I get through? Well, I don't fucking think so, Charlie. You wait. I'll show you that I... Whang! He staggered back a half step, blinking in fatigue-drugged puzzlement at the object he'd run into, which had loomed up out of the whiteout while he'd been looking at the sky, so that he hadn't noticed it until he ran into it. It was... Well, he didn't know what it was, really. What he could see was a curved wall with a little porthole window, but he couldn't see anything through the window thanks to the lighting, such as it was. He'd have stepped back to look at it a little better, but it was right about then that the section of curved wall that had the window on it swung out and clobbered him squarely across the forehead. Ow, he said, and collapsed on his back in the snow. The howling storm ebbed away into a dull, throbbing roar, and shadowy figures loomed over him. He tried to concentrate, pull himself together. With a supreme effort, he closed his hand around his staff, raised his head about a quarter inch, and then blacked out completely. Avery Productions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword No. 2, Knights of the Tenth World Part 1, Opening Maneuvers. Knights of the Tenth World will return with Pawns to Promotion.